Now, for anybody studying physics or doing a master's in anything high energy and high education, we're going to answer some of the most impossible questions that have been posed, as in, how do we solve world peace, the meaning of life, and how you get a gallon into a pint glass. And to answer those questions, and much easier ones in relation to Brexit, I am delighted to be joined by Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin, Lynn Boylan. Lynn, good morning and welcome to Northside Today.
Good morning, Donny.
I think getting a gallon into a pint glass would be much easier to explain than how you're going to have a border on the island of Ireland, but you're not going to have a border. Would you agree?
Oh, I would. I think I'd find it easier to try and explain string theory or quantum physics than to try and explain what the British government are playing at the moment in terms of what they say they want, but they're not facing the reality of how you go about doing that and what the consequences are. So it's a very frustrating time for MEPs, certainly Irish MEPs. I'm sure it's frustrating for the Irish government as well, and for those who are negotiating with the British government, because they seem to have this mental block that you cannot have your cake and eat it.
Lynn, I was thinking, I think it was the day before yesterday, when people in Newcastle or Leeds or Greater Manchester or somewhere like that, or Sunderland, woke up to see that 19 million of their English pounds was now being diverted to a budget in the six counties. And I'm just wondering how these people, or how long these people, do you think, are going to stand by and watch this happening, when most of them, I would contend, know very little about the north of Ireland and are wondering, as their economy shrinks and they're going without, why their English pounds are being channeled across the Irish Sea into the six counties?
Well, to just kind of unpack that a little bit, I suppose the block grant that goes to the north, what Sinn Féin would certainly argue, is we don't know exactly how much of it, I suppose, you know, that there's not a deficit, because the British government won't give us the figures about what comes out of the north and goes into the British exchequer to then go back into the north as part of a block grant. So while, yes, there's a pooling of resources for those living in Newcastle and other parts of Britain, we don't know if the north of Ireland is a net contributor or a deficit. But putting that aside, I think you are absolutely right that certainly those British people who've paid zero attention to the north, especially since the peace process, it's gone off their radar. They couldn't care less about what goes on in the six counties, you know, on another island that's beside them. And they're now hearing that they voted for a Brexit and they can't have that hardline Brexit that they wanted because of the six counties on this island beside them. So I think you're right in saying that for the vast majority of those who voted for Brexit are probably looking and going, why are we holding on to the six counties when it's stopping us from having the Brexit that we want? And that's part of the danger, because you're seeing the hardline Brexiteers then talking about, well, you know, they won't admit that they want a united Ireland, but what they say is, oh, we'll do away with the Good Friday Agreement because it's a stumbling block to the hard Brexit that we want. So we're in very dangerous territory. When you have politicians, I suppose, stoking those flames of the average Joe who voted for Brexit and is being told that they can't have us because of the north of Ireland.
And the other side of it then, Lynn, when you take what I just said there about the money being extracted from the British economy going in to keeping the six counties going, and then when you look at the six counties, I mean, how much EU funding goes into the six counties every year? Do you know off the top of your head, Lynn?
Well, no, there is. There's a huge amount of money goes in through peace funding. And what Sinn Féin MEP Leonie Reader, who's on the Budget Committee in the European Parliament, she's managed to get an amendment into the budget going forward, because the budgets are done over 7 years rather than the five-year electoral term in the European Parliament. She's managed to get a guarantee that at least the peace funding would continue up until 2020, you know, which is a big battle for her to do that in the committee. But there is a huge amount of money goes into the north through peace funding. But equally, I suppose the irony is that those areas in Britain that voted the hardline you know, those that voted for Brexit, ironically, are the areas that actually benefit most from EU funding through the European Social Fund. So I suppose that one of the problems is that there's a lot of people are not aware of, I suppose, the funding that's actually coming from Europe and the benefits that it has for their communities. And that wasn't in the Brexit debate. None of that was covered. Everybody was talking about we're going to get 350 million back and we're going to be putting that into the NHS every year. And we knew that that turned out to be a lie. But there is a huge amount of funding that it's only guaranteed now up until 2020. So that's a big concern as well. But I think for most people in the north, the biggest concern is around the border. Without a doubt, that's what comes up when you're talking to them.
I fully agree with you on that one, Lynn, and I want to flesh that one out a little bit more as we progress. But I suppose what the point that I'm trying to lead on to, and I'm trying to simplify this for people, because I think most people on the street, no more than myself, our head is sore from it, because none of it, no matter which way you look at this, it's very hard to see an in-game and what the in-game is going to look like. So I'm trying to bring it through in stages. Now, and the stage that I want to move on to next is, if you take, and we'll just take that 19 million that the British Exchequer put into the North the other day. Now, if you subtract the EU money that's going in there, and I'm talking about EU money, we'll say for argument's sake, for agriculture and other EU money that's going into the North, when Brexit actually happens, because we have heard Theresa May time out of number, Brexit means Brexit. So let's take it for the purposes of the interview, Lynn, that Brexit actually goes ahead. The EU are just simply going to turn that tap off, and that money will then be gone out of the north. So now the person in Newcastle, Manchester or Leeds is looking at the British government having to put even more money into the north to try and offset some of the EU money, which won't be going there. So, do you see where I'm going with this?
Oh no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, and a big concern, because in the north, as you said, the large area is dedicated to farming land and agricultural practice, and they do get a lot of money through CAP. And what the British government had said during Brexit was, nothing is going to change in terms of that. You know, after Brexit, we'll continue to support farmers. But there is not a hope in hell that the British government are going to replace the Common Agricultural Policy. It's the biggest chunk out of the European budget every year goes to subsidising farmers, not just in Ireland and Britain, but across the EU. So there is just no way that the British government are going to replace that money. And you're absolutely right. While they might not replace it to farmers, who, I suppose, then if their livelihoods are gone, but the north of Ireland is still, I suppose, under the jurisdiction of the British government, so therefore it has to run, it has to function, and as you're saying, that then they're going to have to subsidise the money somewhere else. And if that's coming from those people who, as you said, wanted to vote for Brexit and are now looking and saying, why is our money going over there?
And that's exactly the point that I was coming along to, Lynn, because once that starts to happen and the reality of Brexit bites on the and I would even go so far as to say just England. I'm leaving Scotland and Wales out of it, because I have a feeling that Scotland and Wales, if this continues and keeps going down the road it's going, that they're going to turn around and say, hold on a minute, we're part of the UK as well. Where's our percentage of the money that you're sending over to Northern Ireland? We want more. And you're looking for, we're back to the opposite now. You're trying to put a pint glass and fill a gallon with it, because everybody's looking for more money from an economy which I would think, looking at it on the face of it, is going to contract.
Yep. No, absolutely. I mean, and particularly for those in Scotland, we'll be looking very closely at the North, because they also voted to remain in it. And I mean, when we get on to the point around the border or around the special status, so to speak, or whatever you want to call it, that the North wouldn't change and you wouldn't have any border on the island, I can imagine that Scotland would look very hard and go, well, we want that as well. You know, so the problem, once you unpick one part of Brexit, the problem is, it's like a game of Jenga, you know, that you have to keep rebalancing around and rejigging it, because the whole thing just is, you know, it's just such a complicated process that hasn't been thought through when you gave people a simple yes and no vote. So you're right. I mean, Scotland and Wales will be looking and saying, we want exactly the same as what the north of Ireland gets if the British government were to replace that money from their own exchequer.
And that brings us then, Lynn, neatly to the question of the border. I have heard, I think at this stage, about five or six different visions of what this border is going to look like, and not one of them, not one of them bears any resemblance to reality. And could I put it to you, Lynn, as somebody actually who is a member of a political party, the only political party that operates on both sides of the border, if you want to put it that way, that most of the people talking about this border haven't a God-given clue what they're talking about? And I go back, I have a few years on you, Lynn, so I can go back maybe a little bit further and to when this island was experiencing some of the worst troubles in Europe, and you had a huge contingent of British Army and RUC one side, Irish Army and Gardaí on the other side, and between the might of the two of them, they still couldn't seal the border. So how do these people think? I mean, Grant, we'll put a checkpoint in Newry, we'll put a checkpoint in Auchnacloy, we'll put a checkpoint in Lifford, or a border crossing, and that's the border, you know, sorted out. It bears no resemblance to reality.
No, none whatsoever. I mean, Sinn Féin make no, like, it's no secret we're United Irelanders, and that's where our end game would like to be. So the border that we have today, which is, I suppose most people would say, is it's non-existent. I mean, I can remember as a child going through the checkpoints, but when you drive from north to south now, you don't notice that you're going from one unless you see the changes in the road signs. But what Sinn Féin is saying clearly with Brexit, and I think now you're hearing a consensus across the political parties and across, I suppose, those in the north border communities against Brexit, is that a soft border, hard border, call it what you want, anything that is going to change the current situation is not acceptable. So this talk of, you know, oh, electronics or anything that makes life more difficult for the people who are going back and forth on a daily basis, or for the farmer whose land is on both sides of the border, anything that changes from what he has today or she has today is not acceptable. And the problem is that all of the solutions, as you're saying, that the British government are putting forward and saying, no, it will be a soft Brexit, we'll have a list of trusted traders. I mean, it's bonkers stuff that they're putting forward. It's not going to fly with the European Union. I mean, Ireland is de facto now the back door to the single market. And there is just no way that the powers that be in Brussels, for all of their faults, are going to accept a situation where there's a leaky border that will allow either people or goods to move through from one jurisdiction, which would be outside of the EU, into the EU, and then having free travel once they've gotten into the south. So whatever solution Theresa May is putting forward, they're still on cloud cuckoo land when it comes to the border, because unless you have the hard border, which you know outside of the European Union is what you have for, and then the single market is protected by that, then you have to be part of the customs union, and that's the reality. And they're saying they're not going to be part of the customs union. So the solution which Sinn Féin has put forward from the day that Brexit was declared is that you need a special status for the north of Ireland. And if people don't want to call it a special status, they can call it whatever they want. But the idea is that the north of Ireland will remain within the single market and the customs union, and you move that border then out into the Irish Sea. And that is the only way that you are going to deal with the northern question. Otherwise, you're conning yourself if you think that there's some technological solution, or that the European Union are going to accept a checkpoint here and there along the road.
Can I ask you, Lynn, and it's probably an unfair thing to do to ask one politician, you know. I know you like to have a cut off one another from time to time, but can I ask you what you think of Leo Varadkar's handling of all this?
I think that there has been a shift in the attitude of the Irish government to Britain, certainly when Leo Varadkar took over as Taoiseach, and I think it's been a welcome shift. because for a long time there was this idea that the North was useful when politicians wanted to have a clip off Sinn Féin, but other than that, it was forgotten about and just let them get on with it. And I think now what the reality is that, I suppose, for the Taoiseach and for the Tánaiste, who I suppose is dealing with the Northern politics more often, is that they've realised, one, what it's like to try and deal with the DUP, but also they've realised the implications for the island of Ireland if there's a return to a hard border, or if, you know, if the north of Ireland is taken out. So I think, in fairness to the Taoiseach and to the Tánaiste, they have taken a very, very hard line, and I think it's a welcome one, and it'll probably continue because he's obviously gotten a boost in the polls from the attitude. Everybody likes when you stand firm with the British. It's a popular stance to take in Ireland. But I do think credit where credit is due, that certainly he's taken a tougher line than Enda Kenny did, and that's to be welcomed, that he is. And, you know, and even his comments around that the North won't be forgotten again, I think that's all very, very welcome, because for too long, party politics was at play with the North of Ireland, and it's too serious a question to play party politics.
Well, I think it is, because the alternative of what we could face is we don't even want to think about it, Lynn. You know, we've a whole generation who know nothing
Absolutely.
About what went on, and we'd certainly, and you know and I know that, and let's be fair here, there are enough, as I would describe, headbangers knocking around on both sides that would only love to start again, because there's money in it for them, let's be honest, you know. I was impressed.
Yeah. And I mean, the public will isn't there, but I think that if you put any form of a checkpoint or any sort of a border up, you are going to, I suppose, put up a target, effectively, for those who would maybe like to see a return to the days of the past. But certainly, for the vast majority of people on this island, and definitely for Sinn Féin, nobody wants to go back there. And that's why I say it is very welcome that the Irish government have decided to take that approach now, you know, in trying to resolve the situations in the Assembly, but particularly on the issue of Brexit, that they've realised that this, you know, this has the potential to drag us back to the dark days if it's not handled very carefully.
And I was particularly impressed, I think it was last week, when Theresa May came out and said that it would be quite a simple thing to do. You know, you could have a situation like you have between Canada and America. And Leo Varadkar was very quick to come out and say, well, I have actually been to the Canadian-American border, and what I saw there would be totally unacceptable on the island of Ireland. That impressed me as well, you know. And he seems to be sticking very much to this attitude of, number one, there's going to be no border. Number two, it's not our place to be putting proposals. You're the ones that voted for Brexit. You wanted it. Now you fix it.
No, I agree. And the Canada proposal, again, it's in its fantasy land. The Canadian border has armed police up and down it and checking cars and, you know, doing searches of cars along the way. And that's just not going to fly on the island of Ireland, because that is taking us back to where we were decades ago, and nobody wants to go there. So I think he's absolutely right and also the position, and that's been the position of, I suppose, even the European Michel Barnier, is you've decided democratically, and that's your absolute right to do so, that you're leaving the European Union, but you also have to respect the right that the people of the North of Ireland voted to remain, and okay, they're saying they'll take it as a block vote, but that the vast majority of people on the island of Ireland voted for the Good Friday Agreement, and that also has to be respected and has to come into how you're going to approach, how you're going to get your Brexit that you want, and therefore you're going to have to come up with credible solutions. And they keep throwing out ideas, but none of them are credible. So the Canadian one is the most recent one. Again, not a runner. They were floating the technological one, which doesn't even exist. So they are going to have to come forward with a solution. And of course, that's where the elephant in the room comes into play, is the DUP MPs who are keeping Theresa May in power.
That is so exactly where I was going next, Lynn. You must be into mind reading along with everything else. Has Theresa May prostituted herself on the altar of power by getting into bed with the DUP?
Probably. Yes, I mean, look, nobody, I think in Britain it was very interesting at the time of the election when, you know, the most Googled phrase was, who are the DUP? Because most people didn't know who these people were, and then all of a sudden
in
they
fact,
were hearing about
fact,
you know,
Lynn,
some of their policies and going,
yes, and in fact
we saw
at the time where I think it was Channel 4 and Sky News and I think BBC News as well had to dedicate half hour slots to putting out programmes to explain to the people who the DUP were, what they were, that nobody had heard of them.
No, and I suppose it shows you when, you know, the hunger for power that, as you're saying, Theresa May, you know, got into bed with the DUP, and that has come with a huge price. Because the problem for her is she knows that she called that snap election thinking that she was going to, you know, ride in with a huge majority and they would be able to then negotiate. She'd have a mandate to negotiate the Brexit. And then, of course, that didn't happen. So they're looking over their shoulder. If they hadn't have done the deal with the DUP, they were going to have a Jeremy Corbyn Prime Minister and a Labour government and what that meant. And now that she is in with the DUP, she's in the difficult position where she's fighting off on both sides. So she's fighting with the DUP because they're not going to accept the reality of the only way to avoid a border is that the six counties remains within the customs union and that there's no regulatory, no divergence of any of the standards or situations. So she knows the DUP are resisting that absolutely and are threatening to pull the plug. She also then has Boris and the other, the hard Brexiteers, looking over her shoulder. But what I think Theresa May should do, and this is whether or not she has the backbone to do it, is to call their bluff, because she has to put it up to the DUP. Well, look, you know, you can walk away from government, but if you walk away, there's no guarantee that the Tories are getting in next. And are you going to deal with a Jeremy Corbyn, who, of course, in the past and remains to this day a supporter of a united Ireland, but also is looking for a softer Brexit, certainly than the hardline Brexiteers? And also then in dealing with the situation of those within our own party who have the knives out, do they really want to go into Europe and try and negotiate Brexit and bring home a deal that's going to satisfy the hard Brexiteers within Britain itself? So while it's a difficult situation, I think the only way out for her is to, you know, put it up to them. We'll go, all right then.
I think,
you know,
I said it
either
to
you, Boris, you go in and negotiate, or else the DUP, let's go to the election and see who comes back.
I think I used the phrase the other day, Lynn, when we were chatting about this, when we were setting up this interview, that she seems to be too busy firefighting on three, if not four, different fronts. She's trying to keep an eye on Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party. She has, as you say, people within her own party who have the knives out for her. And then she's trying to placate the DUP to keep them on side, while all the time trying to negotiate with Michel Barnier. And, like, I don't care how good you are, that's impossible.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And, I mean, she went off to Chequers there the other week and they said they weren't going to leave until they white smoke on what type of Brexit they want. But she came out and it was, again, the same, you know, lack of detail and just repeating the soundbites of, you know, we want to leave the customs union, but we want to have a trade agreement and there will be no hard border. So I think she's got no choice now. But it's, as you said, it's completely impossible for her to try and firefight all around her while going in and negotiating. And the only way that she will deal with that is to call their bluff and to absolutely go, okay, Boris, you take it.
Yeah,
is that what you want? Do you want to go in and negotiate Brexit and the same for the DUP?
I think
and that way then she'll either, you know, you call their bluff and they'll either go away with their tails between their legs or they'll take her up on it. But one way or another, at least we'd have some sort of clarity then.
Yeah, I find it, you know, and I don't know how many other people have picked up on this. And as I say, Lynn, I'm kind of trying to ask the questions and reflect what I think a lot of the people on the street here in Ireland are thinking about this. But one thing that has struck me from way back, and I think particularly since Arlene Foster took over as head of the DUP, I have yet to this day to hear anybody in the DUP refer to the Good Friday Agreement as the Good Friday Agreement. They continually refer to it as the Belfast Agreement. So when you have people that are that much entrenched, I mean, it's known throughout the world as the Good Friday Agreement, and I have yet to hear one of them refer to it as that. When you have people that are that entrenched, I find it very hard to see how you're going to, I'm not going to say deal with them, but move them to seeing what the possible consequences of this could be.
You see, I think they know the consequences, and I think that's the more tragic part of the DUP, is that they voted for Brexit not because they in their hearts believed that Brexit was going to be to the benefit of the people they represent. I mean, let's not forget, a lot of the big farmers in the north are unionist farmers, you know, the manufacturers, businesses. My honest thing is that what the DUP looked at it was that Brexit is a way, and they knew full well that Brexit could possibly mean a return to a border on the island of Ireland, and that it would further cement the connection between the north of Ireland and Britain. And they put that above and beyond everything else because they saw it as an opportunity. So it wasn't about representing the people who vote for them. It was about the ideology of unionism, and this is a way of just deepening that connection between the north and Britain. And I think that's the sad part, because, you know, as elected reps, regardless of your ideology, you would like to think that at the heart of it, it is about doing the best for the people that vote you in, and I think that they were prepared to sacrifice all of that for the sake of unionism, and that makes it very, very difficult to try and negotiate with them, because that's the mindset they've done. They're prepared to even, I said, damage the livelihoods of those who are in the communities that they represent.
Lynn, we have 1 minute or less left, and it's one question that I've been itching to ask you since the interview began, so I'm going to finish with this one. In the corridors of power, when you're outside and you're not in the Assembly in Brussels and you're not at face-to-face meetings that are televised, etc., etc., what's the general consensus in the corridors of power when you're chatting over a coffee or having lunch with other MEPs?
Frustration, I think, is the first and foremost, because for all MEPs, regardless of your party, there's a lot of work gets done, a lot of legislation that, you know, you're trying to get past and negotiate. And it seems that since the Brexit referendum, we're going around in circle after circle, you know, trying to, I suppose, anticipate, you know, what Brexit means for us as EU people from other EU countries living in Britain, for British people living in the European Union. And the problem is, it's all hypothetical until Britain comes forward with a concrete proposal. So it's taking up a huge amount of time and energy dealing with Brexit. But it's like trying to, I don't know how you'd say it, shifting sands all the time because you've nothing concrete to work with. So frustration is definitely the biggest factor. But also, I suppose, worryingly within some corridors, is this idea, you know, we have to really punish Britain and, you know, really be seen to, you know, send out a message to other European countries. And that's not in anybody's benefit either, you know, that you punish people in that way. So there's a little bit of that's kind of eased off a little bit. That is at the start. It was like, I suppose, when they refer to it as like the divorce, the spurned partner was out, you know, for blood and out to really punish Britain. But that's certainly not in the interest of Ireland, who trades quite readily with Britain. So, I mean, you have that element to it. And the other part that really, I suppose, the biggest concern, certainly from the four Sinn Féin MEPs' perspective, is the using of Brexit to try and push a federal Europe agenda, and that's very much at play. You know, this idea now that Ireland should just abandon its neutrality and join up to the Common Security and Defence Programme, pushing for pan-European lists, because now that the British MEPs are gone, we have these extra seats, and shouldn't we have a pan-European-wide electoral constituency? So that, for me, is a huge concern, because I don't believe that the Irish people want to be part of the United States of Europe. I think they're quite proud of their sovereignty, and they like to work in cooperation with the European Union. So one, the frustration of trying to deal with Britain and what they do or don't want. Then those who are just out to punish them, regardless of the consequences for the business and the trade of Britain. And then you have those who are the federalists, who see it as an opportunity to further that project.
Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP for Dublin. Thank you so much, Lynn, for joining me and doing your absolute best to try and bring clarity to something that is sadly, sadly lacking in clarity. And I have a feeling, Lynn, that before this is all completed, we'll be talking on more than one occasion. Lynn, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks a million. Thank you, Donnie. Good to talk. Thank you.
Bye.